Joining us via Zoom is Andrew Kelly. He is, I think you're the owner of Small Batch Roasting Co. I didn't check that. Are you the owner, Andrew?
I am the owner. Yes, excellent. It's all me.
Thank you for coming in via Zoom and having a chat. We're having a good chat off air, which is why I'm a bit confused about where I'm up to. I will, again, I'll declare that I'm a customer of yours. I am a recent convert. And you, in fact, indirectly, you're a customer of mine, which is a funny thing. But I've been enjoying your coffee for the last couple of weeks. And so let's start there. Small Batch Roasting Co., what is that?
Yeah, I like that question. We are a very small producer-focused coffee roasting company. I was about to say wine producing company. I think that's my other dream. We've been roasting coffee in North Melbourne since 2009. When we started back then, we were roasting within Auction Rooms Cafe in North Melbourne. And pretty soon after, maybe within 6 months, I suppose, we realized that we needed a proper setup and also an entity that reflected the coffee roasting aspect. So Small Batch Roasting Co. Came about then in probably 2010.
And so I started drinking coffee about, I don't know, 19 years ago when I got my first real job in the wine industry, and I was almost peer pressured into liking it. I was the coffee boy. I had to go and get it, and I thought, well, if I'm going to go over the road every morning and buy coffee, I may as well drink some as well. And my taste has matured, you know, as you would hope, you know, from going from a latte with two sugars to I now, you know, pour over coffees and discovering that and single origin. It's really only been this year I actually looked into what all of that means, you know, single origin and washed versus, you know, natural and all of these terms that have been on my coffee beans, but I just, you know, just been drinking good coffee. And I've discovered that coffee and wine, like in terms of where it comes from, the terroir, if we use the French term, it's such a similarity between how where it's grown can affect the flavor of the coffee. It's, I mean, what are the key quality factors for coffee beans?
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing for sure. And I reflect a lot on that, the similarities between coffee and wine from a provenance and terroir point of view. I want to just, I don't know, almost like clarify that though. For me, coffee is frustratingly obfuscating in terms of terroir and provenance. And I'll cover the terroir side of it first.
Yeah.
Because unlike wine, coffee first has to get, obviously it's a cherry. And then
I didn't realize that, by the way. I only learned that this year that it was a cherry. I'm like, yeah. Far out. It's so weird.
It's the seed that we ultimately grind up and drink. Well, we drink the water that is poured over that ground seed, of course. So there's so many different ways of handling that fruit on a farm level. You can anything from dry process, which is essentially drying it with its all of the fruit mucilage around that seed, to completely stripping it away mechanically. And that sounds worse than it is, but essentially washing it mechanically so that you don't have any of that fruit influence around the seed while it dries. And it's not like with wine, it's a continuum. There's many different ways of dialing in particular flavors. Some of them are able to be chosen, and others, you know, happen while from a wild ferment basis, if you like. Some of them can't be controlled. And then, of course, the seed needs to be dried, then it needs to be stored. And, you know, that doesn't sound, it sounds like a trivial thing, but in the case of a 2,000 meter high farm, keeping coffee dry and stable is actually a very complicated thing. I'll just continue and then I'll pause for a sec, but then the coffee, of course, has to come down to a lower altitude station generally where it's milled, prepared for export. And like any grain, it gets density sorted, size sorted, color laser sorted, and of course its moisture and activity, its humidity levels and its water activity are also measured at that point. And then, and this is why coffee is frustrating for me compared to wine, then it gets shipped over to the countries where it's roasted. And then the final step, and I'll pause after this, is that of course it then gets ground and brewed into various beverages, which happen at the home level or the cafe level. And the permutations of coffee drinking, as I'm sure I don't need to say, are crazily long and large, with milk, without milk, moka pot, plungers, you know, roast level itself and the grind size itself play a major part. Anyway, I'll pause and yes, I hope I confounded that to some extent.
What I love is what you alluded to at the start too, is the fact that drinking a cup of coffee, somebody initially had to work out that if they get the seeds from this cherry and, you know, dry it and, you know, water, you know, ferment or go through all these things and then grind it and pour hot water over it, eventually it tastes pretty good. That discovery in itself was just like, how does that come about? And I'm sure that's a discussion, like a very long discussion, like yes. how people found out about fermentation and alcohol to begin with. But the thing I guess I wanted to sort of follow on is, how important is the roasting process in the flavor of the final product?
Yeah, very, very much so. Very important. We can find ways to roast coffee to either highlight sweetness, body, acidity, or if you like, the best balance of all of those. Roast length makes a big has a big influence on that, and as well the style of roasting, whether it's more conductive or more convective. Then there's, of course, just the broad outlines of whether you're roasting for filter extraction, which is if we like manual methods of extraction, or if you're roasting for espresso. Generally speaking, an espresso roast is a longer, more robust roast. You're essentially, what you're changing in the roast process is how extractable that ground coffee will be. The longer the roast, the more extractable it is, and the heavier, if you like, the darker, if you like, the more extractable the coffee becomes. And just to put it in a nutshell, because with an espresso extraction, it's a 30-second long process at most, generally speaking. We need, because it's so short relative to a, you know, 5 to 10 minute long plunger coffee or French press coffee, you need to make that coffee very extractable. So of course you need to roast it more heavily or darker or longer, so that you can within 30 seconds get out the flavor.
And so, I mean, so knowing that, do you start with thinking, okay, I'm going to make some espresso coffee beans? And how far down that process, when do you buy the beans? Are you buying it from the farm gate, from the grower, or are you buying it from like an agent or something? Or, you know, are you buying them when they come to Australia? Where in that process do you get those beans?
We're really proud to say that we do buy directly from small producers, and we have done for 6 years now. It was a very long road to do that, and it involved having Spanish speakers on staff. And not a trivial thing.
No.
Having said that, I mean, Spanish speakers on staff is a great thing in obviously Spanish speaking countries, but does not help very much when one's buying coffee in Ethiopia.
Yep.
Nonetheless, what we learned from buying coffee in Colombia, which is our real heartland there in the Latin countries, helped us no doubt with buying coffee in Ethiopia. But yeah, we do buy directly from farmers, and we're I suppose focused on, I'm going to introduce the term here, on what we would call free-range coffee, I suppose.
Yeah.
We find that coffee is such a difficult thing to communicate provenance-wise. We see a lot of competing roasters with pretty photos of, you know, let's almost say nativist images, you know, dark-skinned people picking luscious fruit in tropical climates and stuff. We see some photos with coffee roasters with their arm around a coffee producer and, you know, kind of claiming that they're there with the producer. And these are all attempts to try and communicate provenance and buying directly and those kinds of things. But it's a very conflicting thing. Coffee, much more than wine, is still deeply embedded in its colonial roots. There's, if you were to consider most of the people who are subsistence farmers in the world, certainly those within a coffee-producing climate, a large proportion of them are coffee producers. These are people who don't have any access to any other income stream, and they're vulnerable. They treat coffee as a cash crop, of course, in many cases. They don't drink it. And so Yeah, it's a conflicting thing to be involved in, and we need to go above and beyond to try and make sure that we're operating as well as one can. But yeah, we do buy from small producers. We pay at the farm gate. We buy, because of all of this history that I've only just touched on, of course, we buy with equity in mind. We try and treat the producer as an artisan producer, of course, and we try and pay them, or we do pay them a price that reflects that effort they go to, and the risk and vulnerability and the fact that it's their only income. So we take all of this into account, and that frankly determines much more whether we buy the coffee rather than whether we think it's an espresso suitable profile or a filter suitable profile.
And is there a correlation, in generally speaking, in wine, smaller crops produce better quality wine at the end of it? Is that a similar theory in coffee production?
No, sadly not in some ways. I mean, because then there'll at least be that compensation, that recognition that, oh yeah, your yield was screwed. At least your quality is great. Here's a price that reflects that. We certainly try and take yield into account in our pricing, but it's because of taking into account the producer's overall annual income, not because of quality improvement necessarily. I'm jealous as well when I hear about the control that winemakers can have over, cropping and retention of canopy and pruning. And of course, they're equally, vulnerable to weather and climate. Yep. And, they are farmers, as you said earlier. But with coffee, you just don't have that control. The poor subsistence producers are, of course, by necessity, trying to get the maximum yield they can. And potentially can't even pay for labor to prune the trees, even if they did have an idea of what would yield a greater or a lower crop.
Andrew, we're just going to take a very quick break, and we'll come back and keep chatting about coffee. And also, you drink wine, so I think it's important that we bond on that level too.
Indeed.
You're back live on The One Show, 96.5 Inner FM. My name is Phil Smith, and joining us is Andrew Kelly from Small Batch Roasting Co. in North Melbourne. And we were talking about farmers and the provenance of coffee and everything that, not everything, but just briefly touching on what goes into making really good coffee for us. And while most of my guests actually state on the Zoom chat before we talk that they're two coffees in, often the night before there are a bottle of wine at least in. And Andrew, you're no stranger to wine. You've got a particular passion for natural wine, I believe.
Yeah, I was a latecomer, I must admit. I was a little bit resistant to what I saw as a cliche at the time, 3 or 4 years ago, when all of the coffee professionals and baristas I was surrounded by were getting into natural wine. So, of course, I avoided that. But I came around because a very key staff member and friend, Alice Lestrange, who runs a wine importing company called Cultivar with her friend Lucy, kept bringing it around. And I, of course, realized that there was something to this, and there was so many more parallels between coffee and wine than I'd realized as well prior to that. So, yes, I am now a convert.
What's your favorite, or do you have like favorite either producer or style or region?
Yeah, I'm too new to have favorites, and also too new to have that kind of Bible of flavor to draw on to be able to describe what I like, even in some ways. I would also say, like with coffee, we're focused very much on my preference, if you like, is very much provenance, story, lack of additives, purity, digestible. So there are many things that I like. Definitely anything from a pet nat. I'm liking the lighter Bellarine style stuff that I've been drinking lately.
But it's kind of nice too to be in that space where you don't have the prejudice, where you're not, I'm not going to drink Heathcote. Sorry, Marco. Or, I'm not going to drink, Bellarine because, of previous experience. You can just approach it and say to whoever you buy it off, is this a good wine? And they say yes. And you're like, I'll give it a go.
Absolutely. You're actually absolutely right. I'd like to draw a line there between coffee as well. We would like to think that we don't need to acquire a taste. It should be good. You don't need to, although we like always with our coffee to contextualize, you know, this is a coffee from a small producer in a high altitude place in the southern part of Colombia. It's a Caturra varietal. That normally means it's bright and expressive and has a juicy fruit flavor and blah, blah, blah. So contextualizing is good, but we never want people to feel alienated by all of these words. And with coffee, there are too many. With wine, there are also too many. It should just be good and you should be able to enjoy it.
It's a hard one. Coming from wine retail, obviously you need to have a vocabulary where people can say, this is what I've liked in the past, or this is what I've not liked in the past. Sure. So can we go down this avenue or avoid that one, or both at the same time? And it can be intimidating, because I still screenshot some wine reviews just to show people and laugh at them, and I won't name names, but some of them are just so ridiculous. You're like, nobody is... This doesn't actually mean anything to anyone who actually drinks wine. This is almost self-serving. And it's finding the balance between justifying your own position as a wine reviewer by creating these ridiculous things, but also being able to communicate what I like. So when I order coffee off you, or when I order wine off Marco or whatever it is, being able to say, I like this. What do you have in that style? In fact, in my previous coffee dealer, and you can't do it now, obviously, with COVID, but I used to just sniff the beans. Like, they used to open up the container and say, how does that smell? And I'm like, that's the one, you know, and that's how I used to pick it.
Yeah, that's great. I really wish we could get back to that. And I wish wine were accessible like that as well.
But that is it. And that's why, you know, a lot of wine shops do tastings, so people can taste it, rather than, you know, you have that, oh, what's it like? You know, it's like, you know, a white river pebble that's been in a stream for 100 years. Like, okay, so what's that like? You know, do you have a white river pebble for me? You know, it's more, just taste it. But it is hard. And like, how do you get around that in terms of, you know, you're now selling online? How do you communicate what your coffee is like without intimidating people?
Yeah. I guess we do try and contextualize what a country will taste like. And we try and tell people what the experience is as well. For example, certain coffees we categorize as everyday coffees. And by that, we try and say, we also describe coffees in terms of, would you believe, coffee-ness. And, you know, certain coffees, Ethiopians, for example, are a great example. They tend to have so many more expressive fruit and herbal flavors. And you could be mistaken with a filter brew of such a thing, that you could be mistaken in thinking that it's coffee to some extent. Coffeeness sits lower on the list of its obvious flavors. So we try and contextualize in all of those ways. And we also just really rely on building up that trust with customers. So, you know, people who appreciate our roast level, our roast style, and our provenance, I suppose.
That's the thing, isn't it? That's my business, is trust and building up that relationship where people now, after, you know, almost 10 years, just text me and say, Phil, I need more wine. And that's delivered by giving the good stuff all the time. And, you know, sometimes, like you say, your roast might not suit a customer, and that's not an indictment on you or them. It's just, it's not going to be a happy marriage. And finding those customers and keep giving them the good coffee in your instance, and they'll come back. That's very simple business, isn't it?
It is. And maybe that is one little area where coffee beats out wine. They're both, coffee and wine, they're both prone, I think, to people's sad misapprehensions of their former experience. So, you know, the person who says, I don't like Chardonnay, and forever holds strong to that. The person who says, you know, a certain coffee brand has a certain flavor because that's the only one that has the kick they need in the morning, or, you know, there's a lot of things that are moderated by circumstantial or historical misapprehensions, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Coffee perhaps is a little more open to change with that, because we have roast levels, and we claim this these days, we never used to, that really do and should accommodate most tastes. We have a slightly heavier espresso roast, and we'd advocate that for people who are brewing with a French press but adding milk. And we have everything down to the light and the floral and the tea-like, if you like, from a filter brewing point of view. So, Yeah, hopefully we can cover all bases, and we just need to actually have a moment of people's time to be able to communicate this, that we're not here to be coffee snobs. Actually, we don't want to enter into that at all. We want to provide a great product that everyone can use.
I think that's a fantastic way to leave our interview, Andrew. I've got to wrap up the show. Thank you so much for coming on. Quickly, what's the website if people want to find out more about your coffee?
Yeah, thanks for the shout out, Phil. It's smallbatch.com.au.
Excellent. Smallbatch.com.au. Andrew, thank you so much. We'll chat again in the near future, I have no doubt.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Absolute pleasure. So it was Andrew Kelly from Small Batch, smallbatch.com.au.